Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you on a very special week. It's, in a lot of ways, a bigger week even than the major weeks, which Frank and I get goosebumps over major weeks. We all know that. But Ryder Cup week. Ryder Cup week is something special. It doesn't happen every year, and there's not four of them every year. There's one every 2 years. So it's a very unique situation, and the world, really the world of golf, even though it doesn't include golfers from all over the world, focus on the Ryder Cup. It is a huge, and it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger through the years. It starts on Friday, and as we're coming to you, it has not yet started yet. So when you're listening to this podcast, we have not yet started Ryder Cup. It's in a couple of days from now. And I want to remind you, too, to stick around because Frank and I are going to talk here, set things up, set the table, if you will, for one of the greatest Ryder Cup players of all time. Lanny Watkins will be joining us here shortly to talk about Bethpage Black and this edition of the Ryder Cup. Can't wait to talk about it. So stick around. Lanny will be joining us very shortly. In the meantime, the aforementioned Frank Bassett in the Nashville studios. How you doing, Frank?
There's absolutely no reason to call me names like that. Aforementioned? I have been mentioned. Aforementioned. Is that what that means?
I don't think so.
What's going on, buddy? How are you? It's Ryder Cup week. And we're not going to be in New York, but we're going to be covering it. We have people on the ground there, and we don't have to travel, so that's going to be a great thing. And we'll so be getting reports starting today, to be honest. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be raucous. Some statements have been made. Shots fired already. Shots were fired.
By our guest.
Yeah, we're not. I don't know if we're going to. Before we say what happened,
he fired his shot already.
Yeah, it sounds like he did on Golf Now on TV the other day. We'll ask him about that. So
I know.
Lanny, I hear you fired a shot. But Roy McIlroy fired the first shot, and he did that at the end of the matches. He said, "We're coming to America. I'm going to kick their." Okay. Well, welcome to New York. Okay. How you doing?
So a couple boys. Questions. I'm curious, Frank, what you think. Yes. First, I don't know if you even said, but the official promos that are on the air for Ryder Cup, official promos say things to the effect, and you're seeing them on NFL games and different things during the weeks leading up to Ryder Cup. New York, right? So it's a big wide shot of Bethpage. New York, not known for its hospitality. And it goes into the whole thing about it's going to be raucous, it's going to be crazy. I'm like, I kind of think it's almost a dig on itself. Obviously, America's making these promos, Ryder Cup's making these promos, but they readily say that New York is not known as a hospitable place, which I think if you're a New Yorker, you would take a little offense to, wouldn't you? Like, hey, we're nicer than
people. No, they take pride in being jackasses. They do. When's the last time you've been to a game in Madison Square Garden or been up there to Giant Stadium or any of that, you know?
The fans in New York,
they're crazy.
They're not as bad as Philly.
They're darn close.
But I kind of thought it seemed like, wow. I mean, because you're from Tennessee and I'm from Texas, and it's kind of like, you know.
We're from the South.
In Texas, we're nice to everybody. You want need directions? Come on, get in a car. I'll take you where you want
to. Come here, darling. Let me tell you how to get there.
You know, how much money you got? Where do you want to go? Yeah. What, are you bothering me with
you talking to me?
I got no time for you. And I guess that's okay.
That's the way they are. Look at the place. I mean, when's the last time you've been to New York?
It's going to be crazy.
It's in the ditch. The whole state's in the ditch, you know. Anyway, I love Tennessee and Texas, Mississippi and Alabama and Arkansas.
It's a different world. It's a different world than where they've been playing, and certainly Wisconsin.
Well,
people are very nice in Wisconsin. You want some cheese with that?
Let me tell you.
It's going to be different. New York's going to be different.
Trump messed up when he worked on the northern border wall. It should have been the Mason-Dixon. Just put the wall right there, and they can stay up there.
Country divides.
Yeah. And we just lost a bunch of listeners.
Sorry,
guys. We're just having fun and joking. Love the New York crowd, but they are passionate.
Though, isn't it?
They're passionate.
Different atmosphere. Yeah, yeah.
You know, in New York.
So they've even said. I even saw yesterday on Golf Channel doing some previews that they had, and I can't remember who it was. Might have been the president of the PGA of America.
He was on
the Ryder Cup, and they're saying how they're going to police this. And I don't mean in a
They're sending in the National Guard.
Yeah, not National Guard. Not yet.
ICE is going to be there.
But how are they going to enforce if indeed it gets too rowdy? Which I don't know any of the Ryder Cup that gets previewing it. That's a big issue. You're not really worried at Valhalla. They weren't really whistling.
You know
straight.
What?
Yes, it could get crazy. But in New York, they're like, are you going to do when a fan or a number of fans throw some F-bombs or do some bad things?
Well, you know that's going to,
that they get kicked out or what's the protocol. They have to already address that because it's in New York.
Don't you think this may be reverse psychology, that they're ginning it up because they want them just to go after those people from across the pond?
Maybe.
Because of how they started it with McIlroy's comments right after the matches last time.
I think there's truth to it, too, because I think they definitely think we've got to have something in because just yelling, you know, Rory, go home, isn't going to get you kicked out.
That's not going to be yelled.
Right? Well, that's what I'm saying. But that kind of stuff, they're all for it. Everybody's all for it. That's how do what you want in Ryder Cup. But when it starts getting nasty and ugly, like it can, that's what I'm saying.
That's why it gets awful. They're
saying in New York, that people don't know how to scale it back and not – it's like if you – you talk to players and coaches that are from New York and you watch it and there's F-bombs everywhere and somebody goes, what's about the language? And they're like, we're from New York. We're from New Jersey.
Well,
like that's what we say.
And I'm sorry, but not, what difference is it? I mean, didn't Mr. Kimmel say F-U on the air?
He might have.
One of our officials in government? Yeah, okay. So you know, that's typical. I mean, it is. It's just the way they are. They're just passionate. They are.
Yeah, you can put it that way. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jesus. I was just passionate.
What's
this eye for an eye thing, pal?
The other part is the actual team makeup. And I personally, between you and me, we'll see what Lanny has to say about this shortly. But I think the Europeans have a very, very good team. And we all talk about on paper. I still think the Europeans are a very good team. They're the same team with one twin exception. From 2 years ago, when they won very big,
they won very big on a golf course set up to absolutely destroy us.
Yeah,
the thing of it is, and we'll talk to Lanny about this. In the past, Bethpage was a formidable foe. It's not as much anymore because everybody can just bomb the hell out of it. Everybody can.
So I guess.
And it's not going to play to the Bethpage that the Black Horse isn't going to play to its. It's capabilities. It's just not. They had to shorten it. They made the grandstands bigger around the first tee and shorten the first hole.
Well, the first hole is shortened by about 50 yards.
Yeah. So, you know, that's 50 yards is a big
tee would be.
That's a couple of clubs.
The thing about Bethpage is a lot of carry. Yeah. For a lot of people that aren't familiar with it.
Yes.
It's not in a swamp. It's kind of in a marshy areas. And so there's a lot of those cattails, if you will, from tee box to where the fairway starts.
Yeah.
Well, in some cases, like 180 yards of that stuff. Right. Yep. So, there's a reason there's a sign on the first tee saying, if you ain't good enough, you might want to get in your car and go home. It literally says that on a sign that this is a really, really tough golf course. And even for the pros and certainly that kind of carry, but I imagine on some, it's going to be well over 200 yard carry just to get to the fairways.
Well, the pros that doesn't affect them. What affects them is how they've designed the fairways and the landing area and what they've done with the rough. That's really going to affect the pros more than anything. And also pin placements. And you know,
very first hole, by the way, is drivable. It's 340 yards to the front edge, but you've got to go over the corner over a bunch of trees and other things. And they're like, okay, are we going to see guys hitting less than driver? Which brought up a point saying, if you pull out less than a driver in that New York crowd on the first hole with 30,000 people around there, you probably will get
Bryson through. Will have to. He'll fly the green.
Well, that's a 3-wood for him almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
40.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be that's where the crowd comes in, right? You start getting booed because
on the first hole,
a hybrid, you know,
yeah,
the first hole.
I can't wait. I'm glad. I'm glad I've been up there. I'm glad I'm not going to be on property for this one because it's just, you know, there was a pending strike, transportation strike, that the president intervened. Said, you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
No, he called the Teamsters and said, all right, boys. You know, you want me to sign some executive orders for you guys? You know,
we're going to Teamster. Yeah,
I'm going to tell them where Hoffa is if you keep this up.
There's no. Hey, we're going to take a quick break because we've got Lanny standing by, and he's a busy, busy guy this week. Everybody
yes,
wants
is.
To talk to these former Ryder Cup captains and players and whatnot. So we're very fortunate to have him joining us. So we're going to take a quick break, and the legendary Lanny Watkins will join us here on Golf Talk America. Frank and I will be back. You're listening to Golf Talk America. Stick around. Lanny Watkins will join us right after this. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett joining you. And we've been talking about the Ryder Cup in our first segment and all the excitement around it. The excitement really starts now because we've got one of our favorites on, Lanny Watkins, seven-time Ryder Cup member, Hall of Fame member, you name it. Lanny's part of it, and he joins us now. Lanny, thanks so much for being with us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Timmy. I actually played on 8 teams and then was captain, so involved a lot. The disappointing thing for me is, as I look back with the way that today's kids make the team, you know, they make it like their rookie year. I'd have made at least another one or two teams. When I came on tour, you had to be on tour 5 years, be a PGA of America member before you were eligible to be on the Ryder Cup team.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. It was changing. Yeah,
it's a little easier now than it used to be, really,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
I think a lot.
Lanny's got one of the best records in Ryder Cup history and one-loss records, and which brings us to the point of the U.S. struggling, and we'll talk about a number of Ryder Cup things here today, but the U.S. has obviously struggled, and even Tiger is still below 500, and Scotty Scheffler is right at 500. I believe he's 2-2-3 in his career. Difference being what, Lanny? What made you so effective as a Ryder Cup player? And you had to play against, you know, Bernhardt and Seve and very, very good players back then, certainly as well. What's the difference? And I'm not taking anything away from you personally. Maybe it's just you, and you were that good that you love playing that format.
I think a lot of guys' personalities fit match play. I also think that my generation played more match play when we were amateurs, when we were kids. So we had a feeling of what was involved and, you know, how to get aggressive, how to close somebody out early. A lot of the amateur events I played in, there were, you know, 2 matches a day. So you wanted to win your first one as big as you could so you'd have some rest and be fresh for the afternoon match. So I think it was always just that kind of attitude. Plus, you know, I grew up playing with my brother. We were close. I always wanted to beat him. So I think just a little bit more of a killer instinct, if you will. Today's kids, I do know, because my boys grew up playing, you know, junior golf. My youngest, same age as Jordan Spieth here in Dallas, and played against him a lot. And Cramer Hickok and other kids that are on tour, I can't recall them ever playing match play. So, you know, that may be some of it. And then I played a couple of Walker Cup teams as well. And we played matches even in college. We played head-to-head against other schools in matches. So match play was just more prevalent, I think, as I was growing up and going on tour.
The difference, too, with nowadays, they talk about the teams that they're putting together. And we talked to you after the team was put together with Zach Johnson for the previous Ryder Cup. And the criticism came out, and certainly after they got beat by the Europeans, that it was too much of a chummy playing with friends. And that isn't always to the benefit of the Ryder Cup because they don't always play the best together. When you were playing and you had Watson on your team and all kinds of great players on your team all the way from the 70s into the 90s, did it matter to you who you played with? Did you want to play with someone that you were friendly with or went to college with or any of that stuff? Or was there a different mindset back then versus today when they kind of put these guys together because they've been buddies and they vacation together during the off season?
Yeah, there's a little bit more of that. I don't think I ever asked a captain, and I was on 8 teams. I did not ask a captain ever to play with any one player. My deal was, am I playing? Great. Who with? And what position? And so I just wanted to play. I didn't care. And you look back at my resume of who I played with, man, I played with a variety of different players. You know, everybody from Craig Sadler, Corey Pavin, Larry Nelson, Payne Stewart, a bunch, Raymond Floyd, you know, Gil Morgan. I mean, just, you know, all kinds of different players across the spectrum and had success with all of them. Hale Irwin, I think I always thought Hale and I were probably the best team for us. Larry Nelson, I had success. But if you take Larry and Hale and myself, all three of our games were pretty similar. And we did very well in alternate shot together because it was like a mirror image of ourselves. And I think that was very useful. So I think, you know, there were some things that worked better than others, but, you know, I just wanted to play. I didn't care who with.
Lanny, by Lanny Watkins, 8-time Ryder Cup member and captain. Frank, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Lanny, I want to get your read because we're getting a lot of feedback, it seems, from the air quotes here, media out there about Bethpage Black and that it is not the bear that it used to be based on the length of the players today. What's your feeling about that?
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I've never played Bethpage. I mean, it wasn't on any kind of Rota or as far as U.S. Opens and stuff back when I was playing. I don't think they played there till the very late 90s or early 2000s in anything. So I've actually never been up there and played it. The only thing I've played close with, there's another park up on Long Island called Eisenhower Park. It has a bunch of courses. We played a senior tour event at Eisenhower Red where they played a PGA championship many, many years ago, but I have not played Bethpage. So I do know it's a very, very big golf course, but then again, you know, today's players hit it a very long way. You know, Cameron Young did well when he was, you know, even in a teenager, went into New York State Open there. I'm pulling for Cameron, by the way. He was on my scholarship at Wake Forest, so
that's right.
I have a vested interest right there. Great, great young man.
That's a great, great player right there. That kid has a lot of heart, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And since he started putting a lot better, he could be a big factor with his length and the way he's putting. I always felt like you needed guys that were putting well at Ryder Cups. There's going to be crucial putts that have to be made. And guys that can handle that kind of pressure and are putting well generally end up being a pretty big factor.
Hey, Lanny, I'm curious, too, about the teams, the makeup. Every year, it seems like every year, the American team is always considered better on paper, right? They use that phrase all the time, and we all know that's not how games or matches are ever played, but on paper, they look good, and they're higher ranked and all that kind of stuff. The Ryder Cup team this year for the Europeans made one unique kind of a change. Otherwise, it's the exact same 12 guys with the difference of the Højgaard brothers, twin brothers. They switched those guys. One played last time, and now the other, Rasmus, is playing this year. Is that a benefit for the Ryder Cup team from Europe that they're literally almost the exact same team with a couple of genes different between the Højgaards?
I think it's probably a benefit from the standpoint that team has been there, done it, and was very successful. The one thing I did look at last time the European team came in, they were all playing very, very well, had a lot of successes. I'm seeing that from the American team right now. We've got a lot of guys playing very well. A lot of successes. Guys have really kind of that made the team kind of peaked. You know, Cameron Young's a good example. Sam Burns, they've started playing their best golf towards the end of the year. I think that's going to be a big positive. You know, the one guy I'm hoping really kind of gets his game in shape for the Americans is Justin Thomas. He's kind of been very inconsistent. And I think somebody with his, you know, makeup, personality, it would really be great for the American team if he could start lighting it up this week.
When you speak about that too, and again, we're joined by Lanny Watkins talking about the Ryder Cup. When you talk about putting the teams together and how exactly they get put together and who's picked and who's not. And it's normally, you know, top six get chosen. It was different back when you were playing as far as how many captains picks there were. But now there's six captains picks. If I'm not mistaken, and maybe it was your last, maybe before you became a captain, 93, I believe, Ryder Cup, yourself and Raymond Floyd were picked, and both of you were older. If I'm not mistaken, Raymond was already in his 50s, I believe, when he played, and neither of you were in the rankings, and this isn't a rip on either of you, but neither of you were in the top 10 or top 15 in the world rankings. You were farther down the list. Why were you guys picked back then? And it certainly, you know, was justified versus today. If you pick a guy who's ranked in the world rankings of number 30 or 40, even if he's a veteran and knows what he's doing, it seems like that would never, it's a different mindset, it seems like, than it was back then to pick veteran guys. Get a lot more younger guys today, don't they?
Well, and you had the captains taking charge of what they were doing instead of the press trying to run the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're all knowing, all seeing. I mean, you guys are brilliant, you know, so. But
thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
Actually, the very first Ryder Cup picks for the U.S. were me and Tom Watson in 89 when Raymond was captain. And then Raymond came back and, Watson came back in 93 and picked me and Raymond. And then the one in between 91, I was actually the leading point getter for 91 team that played in Kiowa. So I was, you know, getting the end of my career, I was a little bit more up and down, but I had just had a good PGA championship when Azinger won in 93 at Inverness. I think I might have even had the lead with nine holes to play. So I've been playing well. And, and don't forget, they made the picks, you know, 6 weeks before the matches back then. So it was a different situation. You take a veteran player like myself or Raymond, and we knew how to get ourselves and our games ready, you know, for the matches coming up. We'd play or not play or do what needed to be to get ready. I think Watson, as captain, had a lot of confidence in me and Raymond. And also, you know, it may have been a reflection as to who else was on the list. And I don't know who was on that list at that point in time, but it maybe he didn't see guys that would fit well with the rest of the team. Whereas Raymond and I both had a lot of experience playing alternate shot. We played together in alternate shot. And then, best ball and I had a good singles record. So, it ended up working out well. Watson, we won it in England that year. So that he was the last captain and last team to win on foreign soil for the U.S. was 93.
Yeah, you talk about a guy with killer instinct, and you especially, but also Raymond Floyd was one hell of a player. People forget what a great closer he was and how he could just take you to your knees on the golf course. I had the opportunity, Lanny, to play with his sister a couple of times. Remember Marlene Floyd?
I do. In fact, she was my partner one year when we had the mixed team event.
Yeah.
Way back in the day, J.C. Penney. Marlene was my partner one year.
A lot of game. She was a lot of fun to play with. A lot of game. She was just like her brother. I mean, she was a killer. Just like him.
Went for your throat.
But that's what we need more than Ryder.
She was a lot prettier than Raymond, I can tell you that.
Well, yeah. Do you remember? She was voted the most beautiful woman on the LPGA. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated for that.
Yeah.
Years ago. Yeah.
Look at your memory.
Yeah. Well, it's fading quickly, boys. But, we had a lot of fun. She gave me a lot of pointers, and none of them stuck. That's why I'm doing media.
Yeah, that's why you're doing that. Hey, Raymond, if the U.S. Ryder Cup team a few years ago had the opportunity when they were in Italy to have a number of you, meaning the veteran guys, yourself and I believe Corey and Freddie Couples and a lot were there in Rome for that. And I remember you telling us that you weren't really included in some of the activities and having lunch and doing things, which seems such a dichotomy because I would want to pick your brain, right? I would like to have lunch with you and have you tell me about the experience of being down three with three to go or whatever might have happened. That seems like it would, through osmosis, maybe help. And yet you weren't included. And it seems wrong in that sense. What about now with Keegan? Is there a change in that? Do they want some feedback? Do they want any inclusion with you and some of the veterans that might be around those guys?
Yeah, Keegan's been a lot more forthcoming and open about wanting us being a part of it. Unfortunately, I can't get up there this week. I had some other obligations. My youngest son just got married this past weekend, so we've been so busy with that we, you know, just not going to make Bethpage this week, unfortunately. But we weren't included. We had 10 past captains were there, and not one of the team members, captain, or anybody ever came in and talked to us in the team room. We weren't allowed in the team room at the hotel or the locker room at the golf course, and I don't think that'll be the case this year. Plus, they didn't have any – I mean, the Europeans had all their former members, captains, everybody in their team room, locker room, pictures of all their winning teams, pictures of Seve, Olathabo, you know, Faldo, Lyle, Langer, all the guys that had, you know, meant so much to their teams. And they kind of celebrated that for the week. And I think seeing all those things, you know, got the players pumped up. I know that I decorated my team room at the golf course and at the hotel with, my wife Penny and I did, with all the history of our Ryder Cup teams and pictures of our players winning tournaments. Just to, you know, you go and see a picture of yourself winning a tournament, it kind of gets you pumped up, brings back good memories. And they didn't have any of that last year that I saw over there. So that was disappointing. Don't want to sit here and blame Zach Johnson, but it, essentially all of that's the captain's choice and his role. You know, you do everything you can to get your guys pumped up, sure. But they sort of missed the boat there.
Yeah, that was a sad set of circumstances the last time. I don't think it'll be the same this time, although there are a lot of people out there in the media, and I don't really consider us that type media. We just don't – I don't have the opinions that a lot of media people have, given the fact
that
I didn't come from media. I didn't. Yeah. My background's not media, as you can tell, and I do radio. but I just feel like it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be tight. I don't know. That's just my gut feeling this time, because Roy McIlroy fired the first shot after the final match in the last Ryder Cup, saying that he was going to come over here and they were going to kick our butts. I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think that team has the firepower to kick our butts. And they can play up against us pretty well because they're playing good right now. But I just don't think, you know, starting off like they did with that kind of a statement does them any bit of good whatsoever, because they're playing in New York and we all know what it's like up there when you play in front of that crowd.
Yeah, it's tough, and it's going to be competitive, no question. I've always found it interesting. I made this comment the other day that, the Europeans are the ones that always complain about the crowds, that, you know, they're boisterous and they don't like them. Well, they tend to forget that we faced the same thing when we went over there. And the American players would go over there and play in that, and we kind of wore it as a badge of honor. I mean, I've actually had the entire grandstands boo me on the first tee, literally on the first tee when I was introduced in 1985, that far back.
At the Belfry, right.
Yeah, at the Belfry. Yeah. And you know, and I was playing Seve, and, you know, Mark O'Meara and I beat Seve and Panero pretty badly in that match. And so I wore it as a badge of honor. I loved it. When O'Meara was kind of taken aback by it, and I was like, I love it. Let's go. I mean, you know, I wanted to be booed. That meant I was doing well over there. So, I don't know why they, you know, they're so thin-skinned about it, but they sure are. It always bothers them a lot more than it bothered the American players. I mean, I don't remember ever seeing an article anywhere about the American players complaining about the way the galleries were in Europe anywhere.
No.
But that's all you hear when you leave an American Ryder Cup, is that European players complaining how rude all the Americans were. Well, go on. It is what it is.
I told Tim in pre-show this morning, I said, what we need to do is just take the European team and send them to a Philadelphia Eagles game wearing Dallas Cowboy jerseys. And then they'll find out what it's really like in America.
Yeah. We'll see how ugly it can get.
Yeah, no kidding.
Lanny knows that.
Yeah, he does.
Here in Dallas. Again, we're joined by Lanny Watkins, 8-time Ryder Cup member. Being a captain, Ryder Cup, speak to that, if you would, a little bit, Lanny, as far as the passion that Keegan Bradley seems to be bringing to this. And we know that he missed the last Ryder Cup team, and it was kind of devastating for him as a player. Makes it as a captain now, and he seems to really be embracing it. And realizing, boy, this is something really special, and getting to be a part of that. Did you feel that same way when you were a captain?
Yeah, I thought it was the biggest honor I'd ever had in golf, quite honestly, being Ryder Cup captain, you know, heading up the team that represented my country. So, Penny and I spent two years of our life, and I mean, completely immersed in it to the detriment of my golf game. A lot of other little things that we let slide that, we really embraced it and loved every minute of it. Worked for the team very, very hard, did everything we could to make their week special and enjoyable. I think Keegan's doing that. He's taking a page out of the old guys that did that. I know that, he's really embraced it. I think he made far and away the right decision, because I think his attitude and his patriotism is infectious and will really work to the benefit of the team. More so than being a player. If he'd been Scottie Scheffler, where he was the best player in the world, and he was going to be guaranteed to go out there and win five matches, then yeah, maybe he should have played. But I mean, Keegan's an awfully nice player, major champion. But take he and Sam Burns. Is there a really noticeable difference in the, you know, in the golf between Sam Burns and Keegan Bradley? You know, a spot or two here and there, but not something that you think is going to dominate and that you need. So I think Keegan far and away made the nice choice, you know, right choice. Let me tell you how captains get involved. When Nicklaus was captain in 83, you know, this is back when we're wearing, you know, metal spikes in our shoes. I'm playing my first match the first day, and I'm playing with Craig Stadler. And I catch Nicklaus on the third hole. I said, hey, Jack, I waved him over in the cart. And I said, let me get a spike out of your shoe. I blew a shoe by a spike back there. I'm, you know, it's right where I pivot, you know, and swing. And I slipped to my last shot. So he said, no, I got this. And he dives into this massive sack he had on the back of his cart. He comes out of this sack with a cleat and a cleat wrench and stick it up here. And he puts a cleat in my shoe. I mean, you know, right there on the third hole the first day. I mean, he was just, he said he learned from Dave Marr that whatever you could possibly need in the realm of golf on a golf course, you better have it on your cart doing those matches. And Jack was prepared.
Little known fact, right? That's pretty
good
stuff.
That's there. A great story. That's a great story. Now you know what it feels like to be Secretariat. There you go.
Got to get reshoed after the third hole. Hey, Laney, I'm curious, too. The Americans have four guys that have never played Ryder Cup, right? Griffin and Henley, J.J., Cameron Young. All good players, and certainly J.J. has come kind of out of nowhere almost to have a phenomenal year and be where he is on this team. I guess you'd have to go back, obviously, your rookie year. Their mindsets, these are older guys. They're not like necessarily 20, 21-year-old guys. How tough is it for them to appreciate the enormity of a Ryder Cup? If you've never been on that stage in the crowd, and
they'll be excited. They'll be excited, but it's not too big a stage for them. They've all won on big stages. Number one, number two, being a rookie is it's overrated. It's not that. I mean, yeah. I won my first seven Ryder Cup matches before I ever lost one. That was over 2 years. Larry Nelson's first Ryder Cup, he went 5-0. And I was part of Larry and I played together on his first one. All we did was beat 73 straight matches. So I don't think, you know, I look back and I really don't think that, that's the case. You know, these guys are all, they're not like they're fresh out of high school or college or something. They've all been around the block a few times and been involved in major championships. I don't see any issues whatsoever with that. I think it's, I wouldn't even call them rookies.
As far as that first hole, Laney, and I know you haven't played at Bethpage, but I was watching yesterday at Golf Channel, and I'm sure you and most people know the first hole, and it's a dog leg to the right. They were talking about it being shortened quite a bit because they had to put grandstands where the normal first tee would be, and it's possibly even drivable if you're looking at Rory or looking at Bryson, even Young, could maybe even drive a 340-yard hole if you cut it over that corner. How much adrenaline is pumping and how much do you have to get within yourself and say, okay, yes, that's what the crowd wants. They want, and you get caught up in that, but it may not be the best play for you to do something like that. How do you tap down those emotions to do the smart thing that you need to do versus what everybody's yelling at you to do?
Yeah. And you can't listen to the gallery by any stretch of imagination. You hear them, but they're a wall of noise that you don't hear anything specific. You've got to kind of tune yourself out, you know. And I think that's what they will do. I think it also depends on the situation. I'd be surprised if anybody tried to do it in alternate shot, foursomes. Best ball, if I got a big hitter up there, I'm taking the guy who puts it in the fairway, let him put it in the fairway first. And if the other guy wants to take a run at it, have at it. That's the way you play best ball. But it's always good to have that. You know, either have that first tee shot in the fairway, or when I played best ball, my feeling was if I had a big hitter with me, I didn't want him hitting it too hard. I want him to hit it long and straight. So I would have him hit first and hit his normal shot. And I would tell him, don't worry, I'll be in the fairway. So that was kind of the way we played back then when I was playing, you know, best ball. But I think it totally depends on the circumstance, okay, the way the wind's blowing, the way the guy feels, and also the hole location. It may be, you know, because the way the hole sets up, it may be missing in a certain spot. And if you miss it there and the hole location is where it is, you may not be able to even get it close. So I think there are a lot of factors there, but it could be an exciting start, no question.
Did you like playing the foursomes, the alternate shot? Seems to be you put pressure, and you have pressure, somebody you're playing with, and you put them in a bad spot under a tree or wherever. Is it a tough format? Did you enjoy playing where somebody had to play after you hit a shot and you'd leave them with a shot, or vice versa? You'd have to hit after they put you under a tree. Did you enjoy that part of it? Because that's a unique.
Guys, yeah, you all of a sudden you became garbled. I can't hear a thing you're saying. I don't.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Can you hear me now? Do you hear me all right?
No, it's weird. It's like a bad organ.
Can you hear me, Lanny?
No, nothing.
Goodness gracious.
I can hear you. I can hear noises, but nothing. It's a language I don't know.
Let's take a quick break, reset for just a second, and just come right back with Lanny Watkins. What do you say, Tim?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Stick around. We'll be back with Lanny Watkins on Golf Talk America. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Frank Bassett, Tim Matthews, and our guest Lanny Watkins join us. We had a little technical problem. Everything good now, Lanny? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, all good. Thank you. Yes.
When you said you're talking and I can't understand what you're saying, I thought you were saying you're asking a stupid question and I don't even know what the heck.
Well, he was being nice, Tim. He was being nice.
I've been told that before. Yeah, I've been told that before. That's the dumbest question I've ever heard.
All right. Do you remember the question you were asking?
Yeah, the question was about playing the alternate shots. Did you enjoy that when you would sometimes put your partner in a difficult situation or have to play after he puts you in the trees or something else like that? Do you like that format? Because it is pretty unique.
It's a very intense format, and I think that becomes the biggest pairing thing that the captain does is pick out two guys whose personality work really well in that format and whose games match up very well. I also think it's important. One thing I really try to do, and I had a lot of success in alternate shot, was if, let's say I'm playing with Hale Irwin and he's got to walk back 50 yards to go hit a tee shot. I don't meet him down the fairway. I walk back with him. I stand beside him while he's hitting that tee shot, and I own that tee shot. That's mine that he's hitting. And then I walk off the tee like I hit it. So I'm back in the routine of playing, you know, like I would normally play. I think it's very important not to nonchalant that attitude. Otherwise, you don't feel ready to play. And you know, there's no saying sorry in that format. Your partner knows you're trying as hard as you can. You know, partners don't like it when their buddies say, you know, I'm sorry. So just, you know, make up for it with a putt on the next shot. That's all you got to do. So I think it's important to act like your partner's shot is yours. Like, you don't just say nice shot and walk out there and hit it. You've got to take ownership of it.
That's a great thought. I never thought of it that way, Tim.
I hadn't thought of it either. That's very good.
That is good.
The singles matches on Sunday, what it'll come down to, Lanny, no matter who's ahead, if it's 12 singles matches, and anything and some things can happen in that scenario, and oftentimes have happened where teams have come from way behind or tried to hang on to a lead. In those singles matches, do you try to get out with the best guys? In other words, if Scotty's your man and Scotty's been playing well, do you want to get a point from Scotty, or do you need Scotty to be bringing up the rear and maybe you need him at the end of the matches? How do you place your different guys on that final Sunday?
You know, it's been played both ways over the years. There's no question. Nicklaus, when he was captain in 83, put me and Watson at the end. He said he felt like we could get it done if we needed to get the job done. And we did. I mean, I hit a shot that really, you know, tied my match, and then Watson won the last match and we won. Stockton did kind of the same thing at Kiowa with me and Raymond, me and Hale at the end there. I was a match right in front of Hale Langer, and I beat Mark James. There's a little bit of both thinking. It kind of switched in 99 when Crenshaw was four back and he put people out front to try and win matches to go forward. And a lot of the prevalent thinking in the press these days is you should put your top guys out and win. But you've got guys somewhere that you've got to, you know, play. So, whether they're playing well or not, I think the way to go is to take one or two guys, put them out first. When I was captain, for example, I knew the Europeans, because they'd always done it, they always came with one of their bigger names first. So I put Tom Lehman, who's a tough cookie and a tough match play guy, out first. And sure enough, he got Seve and beat him. It gave me a 3-point lead with 11 matches to go. You've got to have your other guys in there somewhere. But I want somebody at the end that, if it comes down to it, they can get the job done. I had Mickelson, my anchor guy, when I was captain. Even though he was a rookie, he was playing really well. But, you know, the guys in the middle didn't get it done for me, unfortunately. And that was, you know, we ended up losing by, half point. So it's a tough call. There's you don't want to leave the entire fate of the Ryder Cup on a guy who's been struggling with his game for the last 3 weeks either. Almost not fair. So the other thing, look at how the guy feels. Let's say Scotty Scheffler's played all four matches going into the singles. If you put him out first at 8:05 or 9 o'clock in the morning, he's not getting as much. If he plays at 11, he gets another hour's sleep, which may be more beneficial than anything else. So you've got to take into account how fit the guy is. You know, has he played four matches? Is he an early riser? I mean, some guys like to get up and get after it. You know, some guys want to sleep in a little longer. So, I mean, it's an individual thing, and you can't just haphazardly throw that out there. You know, if Scotty wants to sleep in, I sure as hell let him, you know. if Sam Burns wants to play early and, you know, let him get out there and get after it, that's great. So, you know, I think that's where you've got to have a discussion with your team individually, you know, one-on-one with the guys, not just everybody at one time. But I think it's worth, you know, getting a plan and formulating that thing leading up to the singles.
Well, Lanny, you're known as a gambler. Before we let you go, putting your money where your mouth is kind of your moniker for years and years on the tour. If you had to put your money where your mouth is, picking a winner, which team, and all of our hearts, I'm sure, are with the U.S., a very formidable European team, where would your money go for this week's weekend's matches?
I'm going with the Americans. I think they've kind of handled things the right way. I like the fact they all went and played a tournament. I like the fact that Xander Schauffele's wife has already had her baby, so that's off his mind. I've actually been in that situation. I had a son born late August of the 87 matches. So, I understand everything that goes into that, but I like the way our guys all played out in Napa. They played really, really well. And you're not hearing any noise from our guys. I think the Europeans are noisy. They're making statements, you know, we should do this. You know, they tell us what we should do. You know, I think all they're doing is putting more pressure on themselves. And, Roy is stating how badly they want to come do it, blah, blah, blah. Just do it. I don't need to hear the noise. And I like the fact I'm not hearing noise from the American team. I think they're acting very businesslike this week, and I like that.
I think that has a lot to do with Keegan also, because of his demeanor and how he manages himself through life and his game. I have a lot of affection for that guy. I think he's a hell of a person.
I couldn't agree more. I think he's going to be a really good leader going forward. I think he will do things the right way. He's got some good vice captains. We never had that luxury. You know, I had my brother tag along when I was an assistant captain for me, and I think I paid his way. We didn't have vice captains back at that point in time. So it was very different.
And a good friend of ours, or mine, and my wife's, Pat Bradley, pinned Keegan, it's her nephew, pinned him a fabulous note. And he's got a lot of solid backing from family, friends, fans. And I was thrilled when they named him captain, and I did not want him to play.
Well, I was too. I was ready for him to be captain. I'd had enough of that Sea Island group of guys. I don't think
I agree.
They were, they hadn't done anything that impressed anybody, and I was ready for all that to move on. That's where it was too much of a buddy system, and it needs to get back to playing golf, which I think they've done a good job with Keegan being there. And I agree with you. Pat Bradley is a wonderful lady. I've gotten to know her really well. A lot of the Hall of Fame stuff that we do with the World Golf Hall of Fame, and she is she's special. And I'm sure, Keegan's got a lot of the same attributes. I think he's going to do a marvelous job.
Yeah, I do too. Lanny, we really appreciate you coming on. I know it's a busy time for you. Congratulations on your son's marriage. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Yep. That's great.
That's great. Yeah. That's what it's all about, family.
We're just waiting on grandkids now. So
I,
we'll be good.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. My oldest boy has that. We have an 11-month-old granddaughter right now. Enjoying the hell out of her. So.
Oh, yeah. I have a granddaughter, and she's fabulous. I'm a big fan of grandkids. They're great. Listen, thank you again so much. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
You bet, guys. Take care.
All right. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lanny.
Lanny Watkins. There he is, the great Lanny Watkins.
And he is fantastic.
And he speaks his mind, Frank. That's what's great about it.
Well, good about it. Yeah. I mean, he speaks the truth. I mean, it's from the heart. Yeah.
Which is what you have to have, right? This isn't a political thing where you got to keep everybody happy. It's about how are we going to win? Damn it. Right. And Lanny's like, okay, here's how you win. Here's what.
Well, that. And his insight.
Back it too.
There were some great insights that he threw out there that we have not heard from others before.
Yes.
So that was great. I just shut up and let you were on a roll. I just wanted to shut up let you and Lanny talk it out.
His best insight was at the end there. He goes, "I had enough of those Sea Island guys."
I know. I muted my mic. I was laughing so hard. That's where my parents lived at Sea Island. I know all those boys. We used to go to Southern Soul Barbecue on Sea Island all the time. And
I still. I mean, we go back. What 2 years when we had Lanny on, and we've had him on since then, but when we had him on about the, was it Marco? What was the name of that course?
Oh yeah.
Simone, Marco Simone, whatever.
Pizza smelly place. I don't know. Marco Simone.
And after that, when he told us, and he said, we had all these guys there with like 300 years of Ryder Cup experience on the Americans.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let us in a locker room. They wouldn't let us have lunch. They would no involvement whatsoever. I'm like, what a waste. Of an asset that the Americans have of all these guys that have been through all these things for years and years and can give you what team wouldn't you want Michael Jordan if you're an NBA team talking to your guys before you go out for the NBA final? Well, yes, you would. He's been through it. He knows. He's got some insight to not use that.
Well, who was in Johnson's ear? Who was in Zach's ear telling him that? Somebody had to be.
I don't know. Or was it his call? We don't know.
Well, if it was his call, then I'm not.
He was the captain. Ultimately, it comes down to him.
Well, that's it.
He could have said, "No, I want to have these guys at least sit down and have a meal with them." Right? It's not like you have to be on the range. He wasn't saying, and Lanny, I don't think was expecting. Let me go out there and work on your game with you, Scotty.
Right? Yeah.
He just, do you want to pick my brain a little bit?
You said that, and that brought something up in my mind. At a live event, I was talking to Greg Norman, and we're out on the range, and Greg and I are just talking. He's known him forever. He's a great guy. This is before he was no longer with Liv. And, I'm going blank. What's his name? I played with him. Long hair, mullet. Hello? I'm just, it's been a long night.
Fleetwood?
No, I love Fleetwood. Lifter. Yeah.
A guy Lifter with a mullet?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm forgetting. American, give me some more clues.
First word, sounds like, anyway, a live player. I'll just say that. Yes, I don't want to say his name. I shouldn't. Anyway, he came over and he said, "I don't mean to interrupt you boys." He said, "But I need some help." And Greg said, "Got to go." And he went to the range and started working with him right there. So here's the commissioner of the tour out there working on this guy's game. Cam Smith is who it was.
Oh, Cam Smith, Australia.
And I asked him afterwards, I said, "You going to tell anybody that he helped you with all that?" I said, "Did he help you first?" He said, "Yeah, he did. He helped me."
Yeah, sure.
He said, "But I'm not going to tell anybody because he'll take credit for if I win."
No, why would you pick Greg Norman's brain, right? What, any of these guys that have some cachet, right, and said, "Okay, I've been through the wars." Why would you not? That just dumbfounded me back then that they didn't do it. And as he said,
that was
even
stupid.
Though he won't be able to be there this week at Bethpage, Yeah. He expects Keegan would certainly, and if you're a former Ryder Cup, I would imagine that Corey and Azinger and a lot of those guys will be at Bethpage, that you wouldn't at least let those guys have a meal with them at breakfast, do something, and just be able to talk to them a little bit.
Well, Keegan has enough self-confidence and his leadership capabilities and his management capabilities that he's not threatened by that.
Well, plus, I don't think he needs all the credit. He's like, whoever gets credit, fine. We win. We all win. Yeah. That's great. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Keegan, we've talked about this before too, Frank, as far as Ryder Cups. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe I'm right on this, that at one point, and it's during Lanny's tenure on the Ryder Cup teams, that, and I'm forgetting his first name, but Gallagher from Europe, I believe he was three straight Ryder Cups. He was the captain. And I can't remember. Was it Peter Gallagher? It was one of those.
Yeah.
I believe he had. Like I don't keep from up with them. 83, 85, 87, or 87, 80, 89, 91, something like that. He was a captain for three straight years. Well, the U.S. never does that. We've talked about that before, too. Should, just like in Olympic basketball, when you had Coach K for, two or three straight Olympics, he was their American coach because he's the guy, and he wins. He knows what to do. If Keegan does well here, I would have no problem with saying, okay, Keegan might need to be, instead of it being, let's just throw a bone to the next guy in line, who's up next, who should be the captain. Let Keegan be the guy for a few Ryder Cups. I wouldn't have a problem with that because I think he's a perfect fit because he has such passion, not only for the game, but for the Ryder Cup. I mean, he's the guy that would bleed to get on a Ryder Cup team, and that's who you want, right? A guy who really envisions everything that the Ryder Cup is all about. So we'll see. We'll see if maybe he's that guy. And, boy, I'm excited about the start of this. As I said, it's almost bigger, isn't it, than majors to get ready for the Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup's more exciting than the majors. I mean, the Masters is exciting every year because, you know, we're coming out of, you know, hibernation, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting. But Ryder Cup, I love it. And President's Cup, I love that too. Walker Cup, absolutely love it.
That's one thing we didn't mention with Lanny, and Lanny was there when it changed. Remember, it had been all the way up until 77. It had been just Ryder Cup would be the U.S. against Great Britain and Ireland.
Yeah, the U.K., right? Yeah.
And
Great Britain, Ireland,
77 changed when you went to 79. It became Europe. And that's when a lot of people point to, that's when it really became a major, major global thing. Because up until then, the U.S. had dominated. You go back to the Hogan-Nelson days of the early, it started in 27. U.S. won all but like three Ryder Cups, right, for the first 50 years or something. And it wasn't much of a match. And it was, the U.S. is a much bigger country than certainly Great Britain and Ireland. So it wasn't as competitive. Once you included Germans and Spaniards and Portuguese and Swedes and whoever else
and in interpreters
Europe was playing well, then you suddenly got, okay, now it's more of a global thing. And you talk to these guys that aren't from there, from South Africa, which the start of the President's Cup, but from South Africa or Asia and Australia, they wish they could be part of the Ryder Cup, right? They're like, it's almost like, I think I remember somebody saying, maybe Norman way back when, I wish my parents would have moved to Great Britain or somewhere so that I could have been on a Ryder Cup team instead of being in Australia and not be eligible to play. That's how big it's gotten. That the whole world, even though there's still limited countries involved, the whole world is really, and everybody gets to go after the U.S. And let's be honest, isn't that what kind of makes the world go around? Everybody wants to go after the U.S. I love the fact that we're kind of big guys and good people and all that. But yeah, when the whole world gets to say, it's everybody against the U.S., it kind of makes it very, very exciting. So yeah. I'm excited.
One thing we didn't touch on, but 7,352 yards is what this course is going to play to.
7,300, you said?
7,352, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
Or for those of you who like meters, it's 6,724.
They might have cut off a few yards, but it probably would only have gone out to maybe 7,500 or something.
But it's only changed the carry on a few holes. So that's where the kicker is on that golf course, is the carry.
It's still going to – and so – we'll see. I mean, again, the U.S., the way it's usually been done is U.S. has more bombers, if you will, in DeChambeau. Even Scheffler puts the ball way out there, and Young and all these guys.
They all hit it out there going.
That has been something that the European team has, if you remember, said, okay, let's have narrower fairways, right? Thicker rough, because if Bryson or any of those guys bomb it and miss, we want them really penalized by it. And, of course, in Italy, it paid off that way because the U.S. was oftentimes – out of position, and the Europeans would just put it down the middle, and have a lot better shots at it. Yeah. We'll see how they set this up. Wider fairways, more lenient because the bombers need to be able to get a little leeway if they miss a fairway a little bit, that it's not that penalizing if they're only 10 yards off. If you remember back in Rome, the rough got to about 6 inches when you were about four strides from the fairway. I mean, once you missed by a little bit, you didn't have to miss the fairway by a lot, you're in 6 inches rough. And the U.S. had a hard time saying, okay, I got to hit a 6-iron out of that. Good luck. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how they set it up.
We'll see what happens. I know.
Should be fun. All right, Frank, let's
anything else? Anything else we want to talk about? Or do we want to, you know, I'll tell you about it in post.
Yeah. Okay.
An idea that I have we might want to do for our folks. By the way, we're going to have an outing next month. Good friend of ours, mine. You don't know him, but he's here in Nashville. Famous songwriter and musician in his own right. And he wrote a lot of number ones. A neat little song called Ain't Nobody, if you remember that song by Chaka Khan.
I love that song.
Yeah, Ain't Nobody. Well, that's my good friend David Walensky, Hawk Walensky. We'll play golf with him all the time. We're all going down. There are going to be 16 of us that are going to head down to Macklemore, which is just north of Chattanooga, up on top of the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
It is a gorgeous, gorgeous place. Two golf courses, a new one they've just done. It's fabulous. So for those of you out there who haven't heard about it, look up Macklemore. I don't have the website in front of me, but we'll be doing a live show from down there, just to preface you.
Okay.
So we'll have you tied in. I don't know who else is going to be on with us, but we'll see.
We actually talked to their marketing person or something that, because we talked about doing a show
Conley Crimmings
a year ago. Yeah. And then we also had was it Charlie Reiner?
Charlie Reimer, yeah. Charlie was on with us. Yeah.
Is he still part?
Well,
part
I don't know. I'm have a conversation coming up with Conley this morning. Conley.
Okay.
Sweet
Charlie
person.
Yeah, we had Charlie on to talk about it. So, talk to him. We maybe down the road we could do some shows from there.
We'll be happy to.
I've been intrigued because you showed me, or I went to the website, just gorgeous.
Oh, God. It's even prettier now with the new course, too.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is a beautiful, beautiful place. And
very nice.
I used to joke, and I don't mean to be sacrilegious, especially in the Festival of Trumpets that we're in right now in religious history or biblical history. But that's what God would have done if he'd had money.
He'd have
built
that golf course.
I think he kind of built the place anyway. So, it's
nice.
He can't leave the show without saying our thoughts and prayers are, of course, with the Kirk family. A horrendous, horrible thing that happened. So,
let's hope that it doesn't go for naught, and that everybody
needs to be kinder and gentler.
Let's learn from that. And
except for those New York
peaceful
fans.
Discussions. Yep, I agree with
you. I'm making light of that, but no, it was absolutely horrendous, and I did spend time. My wife and I watched the funeral. I mean, I'll be honest, we just watched it, and it was pretty impressive what we saw. It was like an old tent revival, basically.
Yeah,
what Trump said, and it was.
Yeah. Let's hope people learn a lesson there. So
absolutely. Okay, buddy.
You're talking about Macklemore, but I wanted to mention that you and I are both members of Invited Clubs.
Yes.
And I want to let people know that way back in 1957, Dallas-based Invited Clubs started out as Club Corp, moved to Invited Clubs a few years ago, leading owner-operator, private golf and country clubs all over the country, and approximately 17,000 peak season employees. They have 150-plus owned or operated golf clubs and country clubs, city clubs, sports clubs all over 26 states. So if you're in anywhere in the country, there should be one nearby you. Just go to invitedclubs.com, and you can find out exactly what we're talking about. Again, some of them are dinner clubs, so great cuisine, resort-style pools,
fabulous
facilities, you name it. They do a phenomenal job at Invited Clubs.
Yep, absolutely. And I have to shout out to my favorite golf
PXG
clubs and apparel, PXG. Thank you, PXG, for being such a great supporter of what we do here at Golf Talk America and of my beautiful equipment that's sitting right here in the studio with me. It needs to go out, but it's pouring down rain. So that being said, PXG. Thank you, PXG. Go to PXG.com, folks. You will not regret it. So there you go.
We are done. Thank you, everybody. Thank you to Landy Watkins for joining us. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Remember to join us next time right here for Golf Talk America.